Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
You can just hear a few bars of a Strauss score and know immediately that it's Strauss. Why is that so?
You want me to explain that? It takes more than half an hour now.
Yeah. In 25 words or less.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's just his typical handwriting. It has to do with harmonics, it has to do with instrumentation, and it has to do with the gesture of his music. His music paints in a wonderful way. If you go deeply into studying that score, you can hear and see everything, and you can see it in the score without hearing it.
And it gives the first 3.5 minutes of prelude before the curtain goes up.
Right.
A new meaning, because, of course, he's describing the night of love that has just been experienced by the Marschlin and Anke.
Exactly.
Obdaya.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you want me to describe that now?
No, that's quite all right.
Here you go, Chucky. Here. Four.
Rosenkavalier for me is one of the greatest masterpieces of operatic repertoire. It is what opera for me should be. It is a wonderful combination of the text and the music with a fantastic playwright, Hugo von Hofstadt, who wrote this absolutely. One time I actually did the first act without music, and it worked. It is so beautifully structured. And the characters, you have everything from prince and princess down to highway robbers and waiters and lackeys. And it's over 20 solo roles. It's something for major companies because it requires the forces required. A large orchestra, lot of solo roles, a chorus, wonderful sets and all that. You can't do this on the cheap. One of the biggest challenges for a stage director is the veracity, the human element of this piece. Because thanks to Hofmannsthal, and thanks, of course, to Richard Strauss, that all the characters, or even the shortest ones, just a few notes, they are created as three-dimensional individuals. And the task of a stage director is to bring that to each character, that they are three-dimensional, recognizable. Right. Everything you do, of course, in the Levée, for example, you are very special to Marceline. You are her private lackeys. So have that wonderful sense of pride, of position that you have. Do you understand what I mean? And then when you bow, it doesn't need to be a very servant-like bow. It's more like, you know, with style. Of course, when you get your uniforms on, it's going to help you a lot.
Now,
one of the greatest, greatest characters in operatic repertoire is the Marschlin. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to kind of just fade only to you at the end, before the blackout. So it's very important that we have the whole. Exactly. So when you, and a lot of times, as wonderful Octavian can be, and Sophie, and our Baron Ox, and all that, I think when the audience leaves, they kind of leave with the memory of the Marschlin.
Thank you.
the Marshlin. She is high royalty, and not royal family level high royalty, but a princess in her own right, and married to the Feldmarschall, which is a field marshal, which of course in this time was, you know, I don't want to say general of all, but pretty high. But he's never there, you know. So she spends a lot of time in this little golden cage and has chosen to bring in young men, also of good family, to entertain some time. And it's easy to keep a bit of removal until one comes along with which you can't, and you fall a little too far. All men of good family have to go and marry young ladies of good family, and coming to terms with that is the essence of who she is.
It's this young boy, 17 years and 2 months old, and very much in love with this Marshalin. And he then has this love at first sight event with Sophie afterwards, and has to leave the Marshalin. And yeah, and he grows up in these 4 hours of the opera. He's like getting from this teeny to a more settled person. In a trousereal role, you have to take care about your moving, what you're doing. Because, I mean, normally you move like a female person, and somehow you have to try to, you have to force your body language that it's a man, and this takes a while until you get to this point where you can just buy it as an audience that this could be a boy as well. I enjoy it a lot, especially in this piece where you switch then in the other way around as well, like the girl playing a man playing a girl game. So you really have to be aware of what you're doing.
About Sophie, I can say that she's a young girl. She's the most young girl in the opera. She's the most innocent and beauty and beautiful and really excited about the life. When comes Octavian, everything changed for her. For the first time in her life, she feel something new.
There seems to be an exact moment where Octavian and Sophie see each other for the first time. Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
Is it marked that way in the score?
It's not marked, but I mean, you heard it and we hear it. And a lot of all of us, we will realize at that moment when they really come together. It's in the music. It's a very soft moment.
Yeah.
Very, very soft moment, and it's unmistakable. It's right there.
Mm.
I can show you.
Yeah.
Encounter is it's really special. They are young, beautiful, really, I don't know, full of life, and this encounter is it's really strong in the opera, and not just on stage, but with the music. The music begin to explode, begin with this duo, really sublime.
In her younger years, I think the Marschallin was Sophie. She also comes from a cloister, also very experienced. And in the first act, when she's alone with Octavian in her room, you can see aspects of Sophie's character in the way she's written musically. She chatters. She has a lot to say. She's kind of playful and youthful. But, you know, Sophie also spends a lot of time soaring around in the stratosphere with her voice. The Marschallin does some of that too. You know, that's how the trio begins, is her soaring around quietly in the stratosphere, just like Sophie does. However, this is probably the last time I get one more moment to chatter a little bit and soar around in my high range and say goodbye to that. I don't think this is her last affair, but it's the last one where she will be so careless as to lose her heart. And this is where everybody has a moment where all of a sudden they see the end of their life. Everybody has that moment. She has that moment in this opera. So, yes, travels a very long way from curtain up to curtain down.
All of us have gone in our life, in the three stages. We have had the Sophie stage as a very young person and innocent and impulsive. We've had the Octavian stage. And of course, we've had the Marschallin stage, where all of a sudden we all realize this is the way that life is, that the life's importance is this is what it is, and in the how you live it, that's going to make the difference. And that's a line I learned from Rosenkavalier.
Baranox is one of those people. He's a diamond, but a rough diamond, I would say. He actually loves life, he loves women, he loves food, and he's one of those people who believes his own spin. He's, you know, in some ways a bit like a modern politician. He believes his, he believes exactly what he wants to believe. He believes himself to be irresistible to all women. I mean, some people make him out to be a, some kind of a pervert or a rapist, but I don't see that at all. He just assumes himself to be irresistible to all women and that they are only too grateful for his advances. I mean, poor old little Sophie. I always feel mean about behaving so meanly to Sophie, because every Sophie I've worked with, and this is no exception, has been delightful. But he genuinely feels he's lowering himself by marrying below his class. But I think the thing about the Ox is also he goes through all this experience, and I don't believe he's learned a great deal. He's not one of those characters who comes out of the opera a different person. Ox is a comic character, but I don't think one should need to make him funny. I think what he does is funny because he takes himself so seriously. You know, the fact that it doesn't occur to him that anything he's ever saying or doing is inappropriate. Because it's so complicated and there's so much stage business, you mustn't be too hard on yourself if you go wrong. I mean, a distinguished colleague of mine said it won't be a case of if I go wrong in this role, it'll be where I go wrong. But one tries to do one's best, and the thing about the role is that it is enormous fun, particularly as when you have such wonderful and fun colleagues as we have here in San Diego.
Look at the text to see what you're saying, and then my recommendation would be, like I said, Richard Van Rolf and I, we would stand together this way and we're discussing who got wounded and all that. There's a conductor, but at the same time we're discussing it together. What would be bad is like, who got wounded? I mean, you know, you see what I mean? So I'm not asking for movement. I'm asking for knowing what's happened, your reactions, trying to find out who the hell are you talking about, and asking each other what it is that you're doing. But then the chorus here is very, very strongly integrated with the soloist. There is no division. There's no, like, they're not just observers or they're not just a kind of a reactors. They are participating in the drama with individual characterizations and individual functions.
Do you have the chorus singing on its own? You also have what are called compromario roles that are usually taken from the chorus in the way of small character parts, and you also have what is called chorus bits, which can be something like the Marshalin's lackeys or the waiters in Act 3 for the masquerade at the inn. So it's in casting the chorus for Rose and Cavalier, you not only have to think about the soprano section or the tenor section, but who out of that ensemble can be these roles or the chorus bits. The SATB chorus, or the soprano, alto, tenor, bass chorus, has two really big scenes, one in Act 2 and one in Act 3. And the Act 2 scene is probably 4 minutes long, but you could have sung in an opera chorus for 20 years and never have sung music like this. It's 4 pages where you are really on your own. As a chorister, you don't get that much help from the orchestra in the way of them playing your part or doubling your part. It's complicated rhythm. And it really is in my mind, Strauss creating a kind of organized chaos for the dramatic moment that is the duel between Octavian and Ox, and the people's reaction to that when they come in. Working very independently as a chorister.
At the Dresden Staatsoper for a while. And I want to ask you a kind of a crazy question. You hear about tradition being passed on amongst the players in an orchestra. And it was only 100 years ago, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the premiere of Der Rosenkavalier in Dresden. Did you learn anything from the orchestra about playing Rosenkavalier especially? Or about playing Strauss in general?
Oh, yeah. A conductor is just wise if he always learns from the orchestras, from musicians. That's part of our job. But especially with an old-fashioned and very traditional, wonderful top-class orchestra like the Dresden Staatskapelle, you can't do anything better as a conductor. Just when you conduct, you open your eyes wide and listen to what they do and what their tradition is famous. And this orchestra is special, and is special especially for the Strauss operas and for the Strauss repertoire. I did indeed learn a lot from them by conducting there.
I have to ask you, how did the orchestra rehearsal go yesterday and today?
Wonderful. I'm the San Diego Symphony is a wonderful orchestra, and I know them, and we have worked, as you said, a lot together in opera and in concerts. They are extremely prepared for that difficult piece. There must be rumors that this is a very tough piece to play.
Yeah.
And they prepared themselves very, very, very eagerly, and I had so much fun yesterday and today with orchestra readings. It was nice.
Good. Well, I hear that Strauss is fun to play because you're busy all the time, huh?
It is.
lots of notes.
Opera is an active art form. You have to take an active role to appreciate it. It's not passive. It's not like going to see a film or a musical comedy or anything like that. You've got to prepare yourself. It's like a treasure box. You have to find the key, open that, and all these magnificent elements come out of it.
Thank you.
There is not a person that comes to this opera that will not find themselves on stage at some point. And some people might find themselves in multiple characters. What's astonishing is the women in this opera are captured by Hofmannsthal and Strauss, who are both male. And together, they put together moments that are so, they completely clarify the female human condition. And this is not, it's not like these guys lived in a time that was, you know, women's lib, but that they could capture it so completely is a little bit scary, you know. And if you come with an open heart, and I don't even think, contrary to a lot of people, I don't think that it's necessary that you do a lot of pre-homework on this piece. I do think that if you come with just your mind and your soul open, that Strauss and Hofmannsthal might just walk away with it.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.